Thank you. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors that contributed to this work. I'm going to be discussing habitat complexity in agricultural systems. And so habitat complexity can be defined in many ways, but for our experiment and this talk, we're going to be discussing more landscape perspective. And so in this picture, you can see the corn, the crop area, and adjacent to it, a refuge, so an area that's been planted to a diverse mix and that remains undisturbed throughout the season. And such habitats have been shown to enhance the activity of some above-ground beneficial organisms like carabid beetles or spiders, but there's little known about how such habitats would affect the activity of below-ground organisms. We conducted an experiment with entomopathogenic nematodes, again abbreviated as EPN, and these are naturally occurring enemies of soil-dwelling insects. They're also applied to help control pests in some systems. And our work is to contribute to understanding the ecology of these organisms. So both, how do they contribute naturally when they're, how do they control, excuse me, how do they contribute to natural systems, and also, how could we better use them when we apply them? And we used the species Steinernema carpocapsi. We detected this at our research farm, so we knew it was adapted to the conditions, and so we chose to focus on this species. I'm going to be focusing in on the part of the life cycle where we have an infected insect cadaver, and the nematodes are leaving that cadaver and entering into the surrounding soil. And then seeking out a new host. And so this is really the part of the life cycle that we're focusing on for this experiment. And what we're interested in is dispersal. So if you have these habitats, what kind of dispersal is occurring both within a refuge and out of a refuge into the surrounding crop area? And this is critical in terms of whether they're going to be able to contribute to pest control in the surrounding crop area. And there's already been a great deal of work looking at dispersal in these organisms. So just a couple things I want to point out. First of all, different foraging strategies have been characterized, and the species we're working with has been characterized as an ambusher, meaning that it sits and waits for an insect to go by and then attaches onto that insect. And this is in contrast to cruisers that move throughout the soil seeking out their hosts. Also, laboratory studies have shown that nematodes that are directly leaving an infected cadaver have greater dispersal abilities as compared to those that are applied as infective juveniles. Factors like root density, soil texture, and soil moisture can affect the extent of movement, and we know that soil moisture is something really important driving these nematodes in field settings. And then finally, biotic interactions can affect the extent that they move. And so foracy, or movement on other animals, may be possible. And there has been greater movement shown when they're in the presence of, for example, earthworms or isopods in a laboratory setting. And also, infecting a host that then moves would affect their movement in a system. So the objectives of this work were, first of all, to describe the rate of movement of EPN away from an infected cadaver in a field setting, and then to focus on whether habitat complexity affects the extent and the direction of movement. And we hypothesize that complex habitats will increase movement, either by providing more moderate moisture levels or possibly by the host communities. So we conducted an experiment where we manipulated habitat complexity. We had two treatments, and I refer to them as simple or complex. So simple habitats consisted solely of the crop, which was field corn, and complex habitats consisted of an area that we planted to this refuge-type habitat that was then surrounded by field corn. The experiment was conducted two separate years in different fields, and at both sites we pre-sampled to verify that there were no nematodes present when we conducted the experiment, and the treatments are replicated. So again, you see the simple habitat, which is strictly corn. So in each replicate, we had a control site where we did not apply anything, and an application site where we applied the entomopathogenic nematodes. In the complex habitat, they were applied to the refuge strip, and then it's surrounded by corn. We applied them in the form of infected Galleria melanella in biopsy cassettes that have holes on the side, which enables the nematodes to leave and enter into the surrounding soil. And that way we could also make sure that they were still there and that, yeah. And you can see what it looks like in the field setting when we bury these cassettes. Okay, there we go. Oh, sorry about that. In order to determine whether dispersal occurred, we collected soil samples. So here's where we the site where we applied the infected cadaver. Then we collected soil samples up to 3 meters away, both out of the habitat and into the surrounding crop rows, and within the habitat. And in the simple habitats, it was just across corn rows or within a corn row. The extra samples were taken 2 and 3 meters away to account for the fact that there's, you know, this dispersion of the population occurring in a linear transect limits what we're able to see. And we collected samples throughout the season to see how the pattern changed over time. You can see us here collecting soil samples in both types of habitats. And then we brought the soil samples back to the lab where we used the standard Galleria melanella baiting technique. We would apply 5 at a time and that for 5 days and then see if they were infected with nematodes or not. And for the sake of this talk, I'm just going to be referring to presence-absence data. Did we detect them or not? So first, let's look at the general movement pattern. This is just a snapshot in time, 13 days after application, just in the crop habitat. And what we see on the y-axis is the percent samples in which EPN were present. The x-axis is the distance in meters. And you can see that as we move further away, there's decreasing detection of the nematodes. In comparison to, there have been field studies conducted where they were applied as infective juveniles. And so this rate, according to this paper in 1986, they would have moved about 0.5 meter by this point in time. Sow and all found if you add mulch to the soil, you can increase the rate, and they would have moved to about 1 meter at this point in time. And we did detect them 2 meters away at this date, which means that we did see a maximum rate that was nearly twice as much as had been shown before. And in the second year of the experiment, in complex habitats, we even found them 3 meters away 9 days after applying them, which would be a rate of up to about 30 centimeters per day. So even though our detection at these distances is limited, considering the limited sampling transect that we're using for that area, it's still notable that we're finding these species this far away. And especially they're ambusher species that people don't really expect to move very much. Now I'm going to be dealing with a response variable that I call mean maximum distance. So in each replicate of our experiment, on a given date, I would look at what's the farthest distance away where we detected the nematodes. And that was my maximum distance, and then just the mean across all of the replicates. So let's look at how the pattern changed throughout the season, so after applying them. On the y-axis, you see this mean maximum distance. And the x-axis is the days since application. So 0 is when we buried the infected insects. The blue line represents simple habitats, and the pink line represents complex habitats. What we do see is that as time is passing, there's an increase in the distance, so we're finding them further away. And then there's an interaction with habitats such that on the final sampling date, there was greater detection in complex habitats than simple habitats. We think that one thing that may be driving this pattern is moisture. So according to prior studies, I looked at what the optimal moisture for detecting this species was. And these are dates when it was drier than optimal. And on that final date, it was drier than optimal in the simple habitat, but not in the complex habitat. In 2006, it's very similar according to habitat, but again, we see decreased detection on days that were drier than optimal. If we look at this pattern in terms of the direction of movement, so within rows or across rows, in 2005, complex habitats are represented by the pink bars, and so within rows, there is enhanced movement. We're finding them further away in complex habitats. However, across rows or out of the habitat into the surrounding crop area is similar. So they're still moving out of that habitat at rates that would be similar to what happened just in the cornfield. In 2006, it's actually similar between habitats. However, we again are detecting them further away just in the within row detection direction in general. So I'm sure you've noticed that my results do differ by year, and one of the explanations that I would like to give is that there was actually not the same kind of contrast between habitats in the second year. So in 2005, if we look at plant density, it's much higher in the complex habitats. In 2006, the density is actually pretty much equal, thank you, because of weed levels. Other things may also explain this pattern. And finally, I just want to say that this was really considerable movement for an ambusher, and the main point I want people to take away is that assumptions regarding movement should not solely be based on these classifications, because there are other things happening in the field that can affect the spatial distribution. And habitat complexity may affect it depending on the contrast between habitat types. Thank you to all these people. One minute for questions, if anyone has any questions. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have yield on a plot by plot basis. I don't have that data. Obviously, there's an area that's being set aside to the refuge, which would decrease yield, but just visually from inspecting the area, it didn't vary from plot to plot according to the habitat. But for a farmer, that would definitely be something they would consider, is the area set aside.
Are you concerned that there might be wild nematodes there, and do you know that you're sampling the nematodes you released?
I did a pre-sampling, so I knew what was there before I started the experiment, and I didn't mention this, but in my control samples, I only detected nematodes there in less than 2% of the samples. So either those were coming into the system, or they were long-distance dispersal events from the applications that I made. So it is an assumption, but I believe that with the pre-sampling and the controls that I'm fairly confident that they were the ones that we put out.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.